Buddha, should the Dharma, should the Sangha. We're celebrating the parinirvana of the Buddha today, and it seems particularly appropriate since it's just 5 weeks ago tomorrow that Reverend Alexis died. And it very much seems to have been a parinirvana that happened there. The word parinirvana means the full and final cessation of suffering. Reverend Alexis's training was a very good example of the fact that there are many twistings and turnings in walking the path. And actually, we're all a good example of that fact, because even while we all walk what is generally the same path, following the Buddhas and ancestors, we all go a very individual route. If we take little segments in isolation out of the particular route that each of us takes, you can pick out some segments that are seem to be particularly bright and promising. You can pick out other segments, sometimes right next to those bright, promising ones, that may look just the opposite. It's the continuing on in training that matters. And that is going to win out in the end. Because continuing on in training is continuing to choose the eternal, to give the eternal first place in one's life. You can read accounts of the Buddha's life that hold the Buddha up as the ideal of how this is done. But in fact, one only has to look just a little more closely, and one sees that the Buddha was struggling with some really big spiritual blocks. Struggled with them for a long time. Yet he was the Buddha, and he is the person whose footsteps we are walking in 2,500 years later. instead of focusing on our humanity as being proof that after all we can't really do it, we can just turn on that on its head and say our humanity, all those things we struggle with in ourselves, or a raw material that contains immeasurable treasure of potential enlightenment that can be actualized through training. This may be the ultimate glass half empty or glass half full. Dilemma. If we focus on our humanity with a glass half empty point of view, we cut ourselves off from the very raw material of enlightenment. The ability in partnership with the Eternal to process that raw material of enlightenment so that enlightenment can manifest right out of it. So many times our Master cautioned us, don't try to pull the roots of the lotus out of the mud. The roots of the lotus remain in the mud of our common humanity, the mud of greed, hate, and delusion, the mud of suffering and confusion, the mud of darkly grieved, darkly confused, darkly deluded, but always at its heart purely intentioned past life karma. The selfish self is converted and transcended, not killed and destroyed and got rid of as rubbish or waste that has no use and has no Buddha nature. To train in the acceptance of our humanity is so vitally important when we come to the time of our death. If we have habitually feared and despised it in life, then we are going to do so at the time of death. And when that great light of infinite love manifests, in the face of it, we will judge ourselves as unworthy of it. And send the wheel of karma, give it a whole new kick down the hill and send it rolling down the hill once again, gathering suffering as it goes. I never have known anyone who trained so sincerely and single-mindedly to accept his humanity as Reverend Alexis. And in that, I take him to be a very great teacher for myself. I had the benefit of his confidence for many years, and I know how great that struggle was. Well, small doubt, small enlightenment. Great doubt, great enlightenment. And a great enlightenment came out of the great doubt. We certainly experienced, especially for the first 2 weeks after his death, the immediate, very real benefit of the merit of his training. And who knows how far that merit will extend, and how much benefit may spread to all beings. Well, of course, none of us wants to have delusions of grandeur. It also is not genuine humility to willfully discount the merit of our training. Reverend Alexis's life and Reverend Alexis's death, the aftermath of Reverend Alexis's death, are such a wonderful example of the very great merit that exists in the training of a very humble, very normal, very kind-hearted, very sincere human being. Her master did a series of lectures not long after her great Kensho in 1976 called The Delusion of Illness and Death. But what is the delusion of illness and death? The delusion of illness is that the health of the body is somehow, the body itself is somehow an ultimate reality, not something transitory. Of course, it's not that we don't experience illness. Of course we do. She wasn't denying that fact. The body is transitory, and it is subject to decay, it is subject to illness, it's subject to injury, and we're all going to die. The question is this the loss, when this happens, of a reality? Or is it just a change on the surface of things, the surface appearance of things? when someone dies who we are close to, is a very powerful reminder of our impermanence, the transitory nature of health, the transitory nature of the body. And none of us actually has very long at all. The question is that all there is to it? The delusion of death that she speaks of is a delusion that death is extinction of anything real. The Buddha nature is not born and does not die. If one meditates during and after the death, of any being, especially any being one has been close to, both the impermanence of body and mind and the eternal nature of our true self come sharply into focus. Just as we can sit in meditation and drop underneath the thoughts, flow of thoughts and feeling, perception, drop so far down underneath them, it's like looking way up the surface of the ocean where things are moving up there, but they're distant, and one is down in this deep stillness. So the coming and going of body and mind, the rising and passing, the birth and death, occur within the context of the great ocean of the eternal, which is a great ocean of love and wisdom. There may be storms on the surface. There may be coming into being and passing away on the surface. But in the great ocean itself, there simply is the eternal. And there would be no surface without it. After all, it's the surface of the ocean. When we meditate truly, we take refuge in that which is infinitely greater and infinitely more enduring, infinitely more real than what is on the surface. And even though as long as we're alive, we return to the surface to do that which is good to do, we can live in a way which we take refuge continually in the silent, the unmoving, the eternal, that is the true reality of our lives. And the true reality when we die.